Okay, moving on to the last speaker of the morning, Greg Doyster from the Burnham, who wants to emphasize that he doesn't do technology, he does biology.
Thank you. Well, the only technology I'll talk about is mouse gene knockout technology, and the only thing new is that it won the Nobel Prize last week. So I'll be talking about how does retinoic acid regulate neural differentiation. And so most of you in the audience know retinoic acid is very useful for differentiating ES cells, and one of the main things you get is our neural cells. And so it's led to the belief that, well, retinoic acid is needed to make neurons. Okay, but there's some details involved in this. One of the problems with retinoic acid, one of the good things is it's easily available. You can buy it from Sigma for very cheap amounts of money, and it's been available for like 30, 40 years. But it's also led to a plethora of studies, which are basically gain-of-function studies for retinoic acid. And that doesn't actually tell you what it normally does. As most of us know, you need to do loss-of-function studies. And so I'll tell you about some loss-of-function studies. But a little bit about the introduction of retinoic acid. As most of you probably know, it's derived from vitamin A, but that should be stressed. So it's a vitamin, retinol. And this has to be converted to the active form retinoic acid. So in an RA-generating tissue, the retinol is converted to retinaldehyde, an intermediate, and that one's used for vision. So if this is in the eye, this would be used for vision. And in most other cells where retinol is going to be used, it gets converted to the next form, retinoic acid. And I'll mention the RALDH enzyme, which stands for retinaldehyde dehydrogenase, the key enzyme, which is producing retinoic acid. Now, when retinoic acid is produced, I've mentioned here at the top that it's functioning as a paracrine signaling molecule. And I like to stress that because a lot of studies have been done, loss of function, to try to prove whether it can function autocrine. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think anybody's really proven it functions autocrine yet. Okay, so I'm going to specifically show it going out of the cell. It can be secreted easily. It's a small molecule. And in some cells, it's actually degraded very easily by CYP26, one of the P450s. So there are a lot of cells that specifically do not want to have retinoid signaling. There are some cells that like retinoid signaling. And in fact, they express a protein called CRABP, stands for cellular retinoic acid binding protein. And in this case, this protein will bind retinoic acid and actually can bring it into the nucleus. So there are studies which have shown this pretty clearly. And in the nucleus, then, the retinoic acid receptor is present. And this is actually a nuclear receptor, which will directly bind DNA. And the place it binds is the retinoic acid response element, the RARE. And so all of this has been pretty well characterized. And the issue that comes up, though, is, well, how do we regulate where retinoic acid is normally going to do anything? It does have to be produced somewhere and has to go somewhere. And in reality, when we give it to cell lines, we're giving it in a paracrine fashion. That's good. But there are things that we need to know about what it normally does. Because when we're going to recapitulate this in development, I mean, we're going to recapitulate what happens in development in ES cells. And we'd like to add retinoic acid and all the other molecules that we add. We'd like to add these at the right time, the right amount. And actually, Mark McCullough mentioned this for cardiac development. You don't want Wnt, and then you do want Wnt, and then you don't want it again. So the same will be true for retinoic acid. So I'd just like to tell you a few experiments we've done on mouse embryos to show you more precisely what we think it actually really does. So during the developmental process in a mouse embryo at about E7.5 is when we're going to first see retinoic acid activity. And this can be examined in a transgenic fashion in vivo. You can make RA-reported transgenes. There's one called RARE-like-Z. So you can have one of these rare elements that binds the retinoic acid receptor upstream of like-Z. You can put this in a mouse, and you can have all cells have this transgene. And then only the cells that will turn blue are the cells that are actually having retinoic acid activity going on. And I'll show this embryo first on the left here at day 7.4. And I'm also showing In this case, it's just a double staining experiment. There's going to be staining on the left, which would be the retinoic acid activity from the RARE-like-Z. Staining on the right is going to be one of these enzymes, CYP26s, that will actually degrade retinoic acid. So at this actual stage here, this degrading enzyme is present in the anterior portion of the embryo, which actually is the portion where the forebrain has developed. And so at this point in development, we actually have no retinoic acid yet, okay? But we actually have already developed the forebrain and actually the midbrain. And so this gets to one key issue, is that you don't need retinoic acid to make neural cells, basically. It's not needed for ectoderm to become neural. It's needed afterwards for further differentiation. Okay, and that would not be apparent probably by many of you by reading the literature, but because there's so many cases where people say it makes neural cells. Okay, and I would say that it probably does as a side effect, mainly. You could say as a side effect of adding large amounts of retinoic acid to a cell line, you might stimulate cells to become neural. But normally, this would not happen initially. So you'll have lots of neurons produced already. Well, lots of neural ectodermal progenitors that are forebrain, midbrain. And then at this point in development, retinoic acid does get produced. And at this point, just a little bit later, you have a tremendous amount of retinoic acid. So you go from being very low to being very high pretty quickly. And this degrading enzyme actually prevents the retinoic acid from going into the midbrain and the forebrain. And here's the actual source. So RLDH2 ends up being the big winner for early development in mouse and actually in zebrafish as well. This is the only enzyme which is producing retinoic acid at this stage, so it's responsible for all of this retinoic acid here. And you can see the enzyme's not expressed up in the anterior region where you have midbrain, forebrain. It's down here in the region where the hindbrain and spinal cord are going to develop. Now, in the knockout experiments we've done, you can knock out RLDH2, and you can see that you will be able to eliminate the retinoic acid that RLDH2 produces. And so RLDH2 at this stage, now a little bit later in development, has this posterior expression has expanded now. It's in somitic mesoderm, lateral plate mesoderm. It's all in mesoderm, too. It's not in neural cells. It's not in the heart. It's not in the hindbrain. And there's a tiny bit in the optic region. And what's interesting is this RA reporter, which I showed briefly before, also has an extensive region of expression, which correlates fairly perfectly with where the RLDH2 is, even a little bit in the optic region where RLDH2 is expressed. Now, if you do an RLDH2 knockout and put also the RA reporter in this knockout, you will see all of this expression is lost, almost all of it. The only thing left is a little bit in the eye, which is actually due to RLDH3, which I won't go into, another enzyme. And so this shows that you can knock out the retinoic acid that's going to be needed for all of the development of the hindbrain and the spinal cord, which is really what retinoic acid is doing something for. It's in the early stages of development. It doesn't seem to be around when you're actually making the midbrain and the forebrain, but it's there when you're actually making the hindbrain and the spinal cord. Okay, now, so this is to say that RA is really not needed for neural induction, which is that process where primitive ectoderm becomes neural. And so a couple of good markers, SOX1 and SOX2, are both expressed. If you look at the minus is the RLDH2 minus. So the SOX1 and 2 are both expressed in these mutants. Okay, and the mutants essentially do produce tissue, which you can call spinal cord, hindbrain, of course, the midbrain and the forebrain were already there before retinoic acid was there. But the thing is that these cells are not going to go on to form normal neurons. Okay, and the retinoic acid, here's the RLDH2 in somites. Here's a cross-section through the embryo. So in the somites is the source. The retinoic acid can diffuse into the middle, which will be in the neural tube. So basically, retinoic acid will be everywhere in the neural tube. But as we heard in an earlier talk, it's not needed everywhere in the neural tube. It is used primarily ventrally for motor neuron development. Okay, but here's something that people have seen a lot about in the literature, Hox gene. So here's one good example of what retinoic acid does. It's probably one of the very first things it ever does in development. And it actually is involved in extending HOXB1 from this region, which is in the trunk, into the hindbrain. So here's HOXB1 in an early stage, just coming to this point here, this arrow here. And this is really sort of at the border between where the spinal cord and the hindbrain will be. At this point, HOXB1 normally extends into the hindbrain a little bit and stops. Now, in the RLDH2 mutant here, the HOXB1 does not extend. So here it should have extended, and it did not. So it's a good example of what we think retinoic acid does. It's needed to induce genes. It's certainly involved in inducing HOXB1, and that's been proven basically by lots of experiments which show that there's a retinoic acid response element here that's needed. And if you knock it out, then HOXB1 will not induce in this hindbrain region. But as you notice, there's a lot of HOXB1 in the rest of the embryo. So you don't need retinoic acid for all this HOX expression down here. Now, in the spinal cord, I will briefly mention this. It was mentioned before that retinoic acid does something here. So in the case of the ventral region of the spinal cord, you do need about three different things, three different transcription factors, OLIG2, NKX6, PAX6, all in this region, this sort of yellow region, overlapping to get the place where you're going to make motor neurons. In addition, you do need retinoic acid, which I just showed is everywhere. Okay, and so the gene knockout studies we've done actually show that this is true now. So just a basic loss of function. You don't have retinoic acid, you're missing the PAX expression. If you're missing retinoic acid, you're missing the OLIG2 expression. But here's the gene which did not require the retinoic acid. So retinoic acid doesn't do everything in the system. NKX is still expressed. So this is just telling you maybe more exactly, at least what the loss of function studies are telling us retinoic acid's doing. It's starting off in the hindbrain, needed for HOX genes. It's needed a little bit later in the spinal cord for genes like OLIG2 for motor neuron differentiation. And what's interesting about our system is we can do what we call a conditional rescue, we call it. It's not a conditional knockout. We don't use Cre-Lox. So what you can do is simply give retinoic acid to the mother of these embryos for a short time, just a very small amount of retinoic acid actually in the food from day 6.75 until the time indicated here, and then take them off of this food, put them on normal food, and check at various stages. And we found that a very short dose can rescue these embryos fairly good, at least from the horrible problems of the initial lethality. So a normal embryo here at 9.5 with OLIG2 expression is shown. If you just rescue to a short period, you don't get very good OLIG2 expression. You don't get very good rescue. A little bit later to 8.5, you actually get nicely turned embryos. OLIG2 expression is fairly good. So this is actually showing you can do a rescue in this genetic knockout experiment, and this will teach you more things about what retinoic acid is doing. Okay, now in this rescue, we actually have a fairly nice looking embryo here, and we gave the retinoic acid for a short period of time, just 8. Okay, and you look at it much later and it looks nice, and you can even grow the embryos to day 12. And they do have some defects because of later roles for RLDH2, but they have gotten past this horrible problem at day 8.5 when the embryos don't turn and essentially development stops. So the question would be, this treatment we gave, where did the retinoic acid go? So you can do these experiments with the presence of the rare LAG-Z, RA reporter, and you can see that this, and on the right here, this mutant is the mutant, which was treated with retinoic acid for that short period of time, and then we stopped right at the point when we were going to stop the treatment at 6 somites. So here is also the wild type. So here's where the retinoic acid should normally be. This is due to RLDH2. This is due to the retinoic acid we gave in the food. And my point here is that this was sufficient, and you don't see any retinoic acid in the somites. This is the source, and actually rare LAG-Z is normally on. Here it's actually even on in some lateral plate mesoderm. But you can get an embryo rescued without retinoic acid being active in the somites or the lateral plate mesoderm. And so it gets back to the paracrine function that I mentioned. This is actually probably one of the best experiments showing the early role of retinoic acid is clearly paracrine. And we think that it actually goes into the neural tube probably because CRABP2 is very highly expressed in this tissue, not in the mesoderm. And so that'll going to be tested genetically by knocking this one out in the presence of this system, but I think it's a pretty good bet that CRABP2 is keeping this retinoic acid functioning here, allowing such a small amount, too, that we gave to the embryo to do the rescue. Okay, and so this gets to the issue of where does retinoic acid function, and so I'm saying neural, probably very early, very, very much along the neural tube. And it seems to come down, the expression of this thing came down to about what you would then call the epiblast region. So epiblast is basically primitive ectoderm. As this ectoderm essentially develops further, it'll become the neural ectoderm. Some of the epiblasts will gastrulate, form mesoderm and endoderm. But in this experiment here, what we are showing is that not only is retinoic acid inducing genes, which we thought for many years, HOX genes and OLIG2 I mentioned and PAX6. But there are examples now where retinoic acid is repressing genes. especially FGF8, seems to be, it's in the literature quite a few times now, that FGF8 is repressed by retinoic acid. And we're showing in our loss of function model that this is exactly what we're seeing too. Okay, this was first reported in chicken studies, which you cannot do standard loss of function, but if you do the standard loss of function that we're doing now, you can see that in the case of FGF8, which is normally in the epiblast primitive streak region, you have a clear shift up of FGF8. And you even have a shift down in the heart region, sort of leaving a smaller region here in the mutant that will have no FGF8 activity. And we think that must be very important. FGF8 is an extremely active signaling molecule. Okay, just to show that thing in a little bit blown up, you will see that the region where the FGF8 extends into in the mutant is called the node. Okay, a very important region for left-right signaling and for other things, and we assume that this is not good for an embryo to have a lot of FGF8 in the actual node. And can we show that it's really in the node? So if you section through those embryos, and if you look at just a few sections, we'll have this little concave region where it's the node. Okay, it's a very distinctive little region. And right here, you should normally not have hardly any FGF8, and you have a lot of FGF8 now. Okay, so it's still clearly extending into the node. Okay, so the bottom line of what we're getting here with this FGF8 is that we're thinking now that FGF8 would really play a big role in the epiblast for stem cell proliferation. FGFs are known to be needed for embryonic stem cells to remain undifferentiated and to proliferate. And there's going to be a zone right above this where you have the RA, which is needed for differentiation. And there's going to be a block at this point. So the RA is going to prevent FGF8 from going further anterior. Okay, and so in the mutant, of course, now we have a defect in neural stem cell differentiation. Now the FGF8 has come further up, and now you're not going to have the normal process occurring. Okay, and my last slide is to kind of show maybe overall what is retinoic acid doing, how does it fit in? And so it does not play the early role that some people might think. Okay, so if you're adding retinoic acid to embryonic stem cells, you want to add it maybe a little bit later. And there are many protocols where you don't add RA initially. You add RA at a later point. And so you may get neural differentiation to initiate, and then you'll add RA. I would suggest probably that's much better because you don't need it early. It doesn't function normally. And so you would have the epiblast, which is going to form the neural cell. Some of it will gastrulate to form mesoderm, and some of that mesoderm will actually form the RLDH2, will produce it, which makes the RA, which inhibits the FGF. So there's a little feedback loop here. Some of the epiblast goes on to neural induction, not needing retinoic acid, and forms neural ectoderm, SOX expression, whatever. And here's where RA comes in, an instructive role here, to get some of this neural ectoderm to a particular type of neural ectoderm. Okay, and I think the newest thing that I will tell you about, that I told you about, is its permissive role now. So this role is to repress FGF8 and sort of permit the other processes to occur more normally. So I think we'll have to think of RA as doing a lot more than just inducing genes now. We're going to have to figure out the genes that it might repress as well. So I'd like to thank the people in my lab that did this, primarily Ovidiu Serbu, Natalia Malikova, and I'd like to thank CIRM for the seed grant that's going to arrive any day. Thank you.